state has its way, he'll be dead within the hour. This is Execution Watch. Huntsville, Texas, death penalty capital of the Western world, where prison staff is preparing to put Battaglia to death by injecting him with a deliberate drug overdose. During the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will broadcast live coverage of the killing in Texas, the state responsible for more than a third of all U.S. executions. Execution Watch host Ray Hill, with criminal defense attorneys Larry Douglas, Mike Gillespie, and Paige Yannick. Huntsville reporter outside the death house, Pat Hartwell. And we'll play an interview recorded with Battaglia on death row. The Execution Watch for John Battaglia begins.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Paige Yannick, and we are here at Execution Watch to discuss the case of John David Battaglia. We're here this evening because he is slated for execution sometime before midnight tonight, and he has many, many issues in his case which may or may not result in his case being granted a stay. Mr. Battaglia was convicted in Dallas County, Texas, around 2005, wasn't it, Larry?
The death sentence was issued May 1, 2002.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, May 2002. The murders which were which started the death penalty case occurred in 2001. The two people that he is accused of killing were his 9 and 6-year-old daughters. Mr. Battaglia is facing the possible punishment this evening. On the telephone, we have Pat Hartwell from Austin, from Huntsville, standing outside the death house. Pat, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what is going on out there right now?
Well, it's my understanding there's a pending ruling in the Supreme Court, so the witnesses have not paused. As we all know, the witnesses will not cross until the Supreme Court rules. The Federal District Court has ruled on the drugs, and it was denied. And the pending writ before the Supreme Court, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's concerning the funding and his mental illness.
Yes, ma'am, you're correct. I believe that there are 2 pending writs before the Supreme Court right now. I could be wrong about that, but I believe that there are 2.
And yeah, Greg may have split them. I haven't. Well, when I'm up here, I'm unable to get on my computer, so I don't really know.
I understand.
Batman is mentally ill, and it's a disgrace that the state of Texas would not give the attorneys the funding to get the experts to talk about his mental illness. And it's also my understanding that when it went before the CCA in 2016, when he got his stay, 3 out of 4 psychologists testified that he was mentally ill, and in their 76-page ruling, he was still ruled against.
You are correct that 4 psychiatrists testified or psychologists testified in 2016, and 3 of them said that he was mentally ill and he was not capable of being executed. However, one did testify in the state's favor, and the end of the opinion was that he was ruled competent to be executed.
And that's really a crying shame, isn't it? I mean, these were experts. that had interviewed him and done their research, and they still get shot down. I can see why our guys are so disgusted with the criminal justice system, because they're not listened to, and even the experts that are hired are not listened to. It's very discouraging.
Well, but I understand your dismay, but I also understand that courts and appellate judges operate on a different system than we do in the real world.
Well, of course they do. There wouldn't be 230 people on death row, 25% of them innocent, if they worked in the same standard that normal people do.
Well, they do have a specialized sort of practice.
I want to extend my sympathies to all of John's friends on death row. I know what you're going through right now. Just keep your head up, guys. And if the witnesses cross the street before the end of the hour, I'll be glad to call back and tell you what's going on.
Thank you very much, Patton. I've appreciated being able to speak with you.
Okay, see you later. Bye-bye.
Mr. Battaglia was convicted of capital murder, of murdering his two daughters. This happened as the result of a problem that he and his wife had been having throughout their relationship. It appears from the evidence that was presented in the trial court that both Mr. and Mrs. Battaglia had arguments, verbal and physical arguments throughout their marriage. In 2000, Mrs. Battaglia divorced Mr. Battaglia, and I believe that she remained the custodial parent of the two daughters, the Faith and Liberty, which are the daughters' names, and that Mr. Battaglia went to an apartment in Dallas County. They had a combative relationship for about a year or so. And as a result of an issue where the combat became physical and it resulted in an assault charge against Mr. Battaglia, for which he was put on probation, and then subsequently his probation was about to be, well, he was about to be arrested on a probation revocation when the facts occurred which led to this capital murder case. Mr. Battaglia picked up his two daughters, Faith and Liberty, Sunday morning in 2001, and was taking them out for lunch, and he picked them up from his wife's residence, or his ex-wife's residence. The testimony shows that at about 15 minutes after he had picked up the girls, he had the older daughter, Faith, call home and talked to Mom about the fact that there was a problem that Mom needed to resolve with Dad. And when the older daughter called back, the testimony in the case showed that she was screaming for her mother, and she made comments on the order of her being threatened, "Oh, Daddy, don't do that," and other comments like that. And then there was a scream. And there were gunshots and a scream. And there were other screams. And so basically, Mrs. Battaglia hears her daughters dying over the telephone. This is the factual basis for the capital murder. And it's a capital because there are two dead bodies, the two daughters. And in any event, the case goes to trial very quickly in Dallas County. It goes to trial pretty much in, Larry, isn't it right? Well, didn't it go to trial within about 15 months?
The decision was rendered, the death penalty was handed down almost 2 years from the time of the murders. So it got to trial really quick for capital murder.
In Harris County, our experience is that capitals take much longer to try.
But the murders reportedly occurred on May 2nd, 2001, and he was sentenced to die on May 1st, 2002. So that was quick. That's about a year.
And the sentence occurring so quickly, the trial itself was peculiar to the extent that the defense offered no evidence in trial on guilt and innocence. The only thing, and this is not to criticize the defense lawyer, it appears that the defense lawyers were under specific instructions about this case.
Well, actually, yeah, the defense lawyers, not only was there no evidence presented on the guilt innocence phase of this capital murder case, but actually, Battaglia testified himself to the effect that is what he wanted to happen.
Yes.
So there was no desire on the part of the client, and apparently the instructions may have very well have been not to offer any evidence on the guilt innocence phase, but to focus solely on the punishment phase.
Mm-hmm. Because he took the stand and made a presentation to the judge at the conclusion of guilt and innocence that he just wanted to rest.
Right, and this would have been outside the presence of the jury.
Yes.
But he did not testify at the guilt innocence phase, but there was a sidebar hearing. Where he did let the judge know that was his wish, and he was totally in agreement with there being no testimony offered during the guilt innocence phase. The evidence at the guilt innocence phase was just overwhelming, though, Paige, because not only was he subject to being arrested for the violation of the probation, okay, but Tali had also the history of having a very long and an abusive relationship with the present wife, with the wife that he just divorced,
mm-hmm.
With the two children, but he had one child by another marriage, and that the first wife was actually a lawyer, and he had also been pretty abusive to her, trying to run her off the road, calling a law firm, telling the partner at the law firm that the wife was having an affair with another partner, and that she was expecting a child, calling her creditors and so forth, making all kinds of statements against that prior wife, and in fact, he was even making calls to other people after the killings of the two daughters. And it was clear from the way the testimony was presented that the call that he had the older daughter make to her mother at his apartment, that call was, he put him on speaker.
Yes.
So that they could hear, say something to your mama, telling the older daughter, let your mother know what you have to say to her. And what the young girl was apparently said, and I assume forced to say, was, "Mama, mommy, why do you want to have daddy put in jail?"
Exactly.
Okay, why do you want to have daddy put in jail? And then the daddy don't do it, daddy don't do it, daddy stop. That was pretty blood-curdling kind of testimony to come through. And then with the other testimonies about the abuse, both to the wife, both to the wife, and also to the prior,
mm-hmm.
the prior wife. That was pretty overwhelming. And I understand, Paige, that there's an interview with Battaglia actually on death row. So we're gonna, I guess, hear that interview right now.
Oh, that would be great. Let's do that.
And that's gonna be very revealing to hear him speak.
whole vocabulary. Where do you think I've been for the past 15 years? Plus, then I was a former Marine sergeant. What the fuck am I supposed to say?
Well, you cut it. If you, every time you say it, he has to cut the tape.
Well, you can always edit it out and put in Daisy Hole or something, right? I'm sure I did an interview with this idiot from one of the Dallas TV stations when I first got here. I just kind of see how it was. And he gave me the transcript, and you could see he manipulated and turned everything I said into something else. And I was like, well, that is pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, we're not going to cut nothing. He went slap. That means his tape is rolling. Between now and the end of the interview, we take nothing out except we have to cover our butts.
Right, right. I understand.
On the seven deadly words.
Seven deadly words.
We have to do that because if it gets reported, the station's got to put up $50,000.
Well,
and we don't panhandle that well.
Well, I don't think anybody who's listening is going to squeal on you because, I mean,
I wouldn't.
I can't imagine the Christian conservative church.
People listen to me to catch me.
Oh, yeah, they might. But see, that Death Watch, they never catch on to that.
Yeah.
And you could put it on the internet, and I could swear all day long,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it will go on the internet in film porn.
Yeah, that's the only reason I agreed to do it, because I figured you're going to put it on the internet, and then and I'd ask you, I guess I'll do this now. I got a website. They wouldn't let me bring anything out here.
Yeah, of course.
Which, 2 years ago, I talked to Dallas Morning News, and they did, but I guess the rules change every day. When I go, I'd like to get whatever this is on the internet linked to my website that I have out in Germany.
We can do that. We can't do that until we broadcast it.
Well, that's what I assume. Yeah. Okay, but once it becomes public,
because I would hate to release something from my custody that could be used in against you in any way.
Well, yeah, and obviously I said when you called so early because obviously they listen to everything. Anyway.
Sure.
So,
well, I don't care what they listen to because I don't have to live with them. You have to live with them for the rest of it. But
so
I
I'm probably not going to talk about it.
And since I brought down Andy Collins,
because I just got a letter today. I got a new attorney.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I got like what, 6 weeks, and I finally got a friggin' attorney.
Okay, well, congratulations.
And then he wrote that the other one didn't want to represent me, which I've known for the past 2 years. What?
Yeah, sometimes you have to raise a body odor to get them to run.
Oh, man, I was sitting there going, well, you know, I'm wondering if I'll make it all the way to the end and never get an attorney or file anything. And, oh, man, I've had such a great time. I mean, I was listening to poor Adam over there, and he's had such an ordeal, and I'm like, God, I've had 10 times worse.
All right, old timer. What's it?
Huh?
Old timer, you obviously know how to do time. This ain't your first rodeo.
I'd never been in any trouble with the law until I caught this case.
Really?
Yeah, I was a certified public accountant for 20 years.
Well, see, we were talking about that on the show last night because Gus was just
They didn't broadcast it. They had the Mexican literature show.
We can't use broadcast, but we're on HD.
Yeah, I know, so we can't.
And so what I'll do is I'll find some time on KPFT.
Huh?
I'll find some time on KPFT, and we'll promote it on the prison show. So if you keep on listening, you'll hear Gus's show. It's too important a show not to listen to.
Oh, it was okay.
So, but I have to find time for it.
Right, I hear
In
you.
The meantime, since we interviewed Gus, we got a videotape like me and you got a videotape.
Right.
And that'll be on the internet and on the website.
How long does it take them to get him last night? Because I listened to the news. They didn't even cover him on the TSN news.
He was dead at 6:32.
Oh, so it was quick.
Yeah, it wasn't like that last guy that just lingered until the
last
night.
That was
things like that.
Freeman.
That drives me up the wall.
Yeah, because your show, I think, the show went off and you still hadn't heard.
No, we heard at the last minute.
At the last minute, that's right, exactly.
Minute,
exactly. Yeah, so, okay, so we got that administrative thing out of the way about you could possibly let them put that on the website.
Okay, my producer and I are having an argument about when
with the young fella back there?
Yeah, but we got some good stuff here, so.
Okay.
Start the time a few minutes ago, Mark. See, I'm putting all this editorial stuff in here.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
So
you guys won't read about my case until you get close to the time
show.
So you don't even know who I am.
No. Actually, we know more than you think we know, because Skelton has already gone into the deep research on your case.
Okay. See, I've written him, too, and he's never written me back either.
He's already looked in the... See, I don't remember getting a letter. If you wrote Skelton, it would have come through my box.
I wrote one time, I remember, I wrote about when Marla Blue was on doing the the narration for you, and I said, that's the first time I ever heard her on the radio where she didn't butcher the English language, and I said that I was amazed.
She takes Execution Watch very seriously.
Yeah, she did a very good job, because I used to listen to the news.
Yeah, this is my serious program they got. But Jim's already started researching your case.
Okay.
And so the show is getting ready. I may not be as ready as the rest of them, but the show is
ready. You look ready. You look ready. But I get to come up here and talk to you.
Who were you before this case?
Just a ex-Marine living in Dallas. Like I said, 20 years as a CPA. Was married in the 80s to a girl who was from Louisiana, who was an attorney to Aiken Gump Strauss Auerfeld.
Okay.
And then married another girl... 91, Mary Jean, high school dropout, rich, parents used to sell cocaine and I can't say. What do I say? Whores.
No. Actually, that's not one of the 70 words, but action.
Action's a good word. Girls of the evening, yeah. Entertaining action. Girls. So
you can make a lot of money in that business.
Yeah, yeah. We lived in Highland Park. I don't know if you've heard. It's like kind of the River Oaks of Dallas.
Yeah.
We're very well respected and connected until...
I represent the topless bar owners as a lobbyist.
Oh, okay.
That's how I really make a living. I don't make a living doing radio.
In Houston?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all Episcopalians and they live...
Yeah, I remember there was a big deal. And matter of fact, I had a young Hispanic attorney girlfriend who was on the liquor board at one time. Matter of fact, because I was, before I caught this case, I was trying to get her to do some research on a bar that I thought my father-in-law had owned before he passed away. I was trying to, in my divorce, get some evidence of why they were threatening to kill me.
Okay.
So that I could substantiate the connection between my wife, her half-brother attorney, and the judges and lawyers that were trying to strip me of all my property and put me in prison. So that I wouldn't disclose anything, which I wasn't going to do. It wasn't any of my business.
No, you can't. I work for people in that business.
Yeah.
It's just like being with a bunch of convicts. You make it in prison as long as you're not snitch.
Yeah, yeah. The only problem was they were threatening to kill me for no reason other than to take all my property from me. And, I said, I make enough money. I wasn't really sweating that, but I didn't really appreciate it. Continually getting threats to be killed.
Where was your case tried?
In 2002.
Where?
In Dallas.
In Dallas.
In Dallas, court number one.
Yeah.
By a Judge Janice Warder, who was also a very prominent coke user herself. Matter of fact, one of the guys here used to sell coke and was in her court on a probation violation. And he was worried about having to go back to the pen.
Were you prosecutor during the Henry Wade era?
No, Bill Hill, okay. George Bush's best gay buddy.
Yeah, okay.
You don't know about that.
Well, I'm kind of familiar with Dallas politics.
Yeah, he got
Henry.
In.
The one good thing about Henry Wade is he kept all of that evidence.
No, he was gone long before because he was so old already. Yeah. I think he died in the.
Oh,
early,
he had been incapable of trying a case.
Huh?
He'd been incapable of trying a case years before he died.
Yeah, I mean, he was the DA in Dallas for what, 3 decades or something?
Yeah, 30 years.
No, there was Vance when I think there was Vance when I first, Wade made a, when I came out of the Marine Corps in 82, I went to Dallas, and I started learning politics about Dallas. I worked for, as an oil and gas accountant when I was studying for my CPA, for a family of Highland Park lawyers, and then... Worked for an older gentleman who was an ex-Aggie who was the Catholic German whose father had been on the city council, in politics in Dallas going back, from the First World War to the Second World War, stuff like that. So I'd always been kind of involved in enjoying Dallas for its two-sidedness.
Well, but in Dallas, it's all transparent. I mean, you can see it.
Well, not really. It's amazing how many people really
are. Well, if I was aware of it and you were aware of it.
Well, that's because I kind of got into it a little bit.
Yeah, but who's covering it up?
I'm a half-breed anyhow, you know, so I'm a half Italian and half Briton. So, okay. You know, I get, you know, one minute somebody's calling me and the other one, you know, I'm the best drinking buddy in the world.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, you know. You got to kind of keep your wits about you in a place like Dallas.
Well, you're all laid back about all this.
Well, I've had a lazy day. I'm not doing anything. I'm on death watch now. I don't work out as much. I overeat. And like I said, until today, I didn't even have an attorney. So I was kind of like, well, God, I guess nothing's going to happen my way. You know, and I've been in this situation now, been here 14 or 15 years come May.
Okay.
May 1st. So I've gone through the whole litany of having, you know, my trial attorney tell me, you know, you piece of, you know what, I'm going to make sure you get the death penalty.
Oh, and congratulations. Da, da, da.
And we know, you know, I know who all your wife's friends are and stuff, and we're going to take care of you, and you'll be dead in 2 years, and then getting here, and then the warden's telling me that, oh, we're going to make sure you're dead in 6 months, we'll kill you right here, you know, you piece of this and that.
Mercy.
And then, you know, my appeal's just like...
Gosh, I only had 160 years, nobody ever said anything, I must not have been important.
Well, like I said, you just don't know the right people. Just don't know. I mean, I lived across the street, say in Island Park. I lived across the street from old Attorney Wilson. You know, his oldest daughter, who's the same age I am, Marcy Wilson Sands, best friend Gary Decker owned the Dallas Morning in Belo, and she's married to Stephen Sands, and that Stephen Sands is Carolyn Rose Hunt's oldest son.
Oh, okay.
So that was
during the pedigree of Dallas.
That was a circle. Yeah. That me and my wife had gotten into when we moved to Highland Park.
Yeah.
So when we had a little misunderstanding about her using drugs again, and me kind of wanting her to stop sleeping with this young fella, JB, who was a heroin user. Really? A nice looking guy. I mean, I liked him. You know, I had him over the house all the time, but I really didn't.
Yeah, but just straight guys don't have any judgment on guys. I mean, that's my purview.
Well,
now, see, I got it in on an interview with you there, and you're the last guy to run there.
All right. So when things started falling apart, she goes to our neighbors and tells them I'm an undercover Jew.
Oh,
so they turn against me, and then she goes and gets a couple of her buddies in the DA's office to bring some false charges against me, and then one thing leads to another. In August of 2000, when I turned 44, I think, I'm in the courthouse signing over four deeds of trust for $4 million worth of paid for real estate, saying, okay, leave me alone, don't bother me.
Cut me loose.
And then a few months later, I'm getting threats that I'm going to be shot and killed. For talking to the IRS, so you know, one thing leads to another, and then I wound up here.
Boy, get even is big stuff in Dallas, ain't it?
Huh?
Getting even is big stuff.
Well, it kind of is. I guess it is. It's kind of that old biblical stuff. The people who don't follow the Bible sure like to use the weight of it.
No, listen, the people that have a Bible will beat you to death with it.
Oh, I remember when I first got to Dallas. This is the funniest thing. I used to see all these guys. Standing on the street, I used to work downtown, you know, oil and gas, working for lawyers,
sure.
Nothing but bankers and, you know, real estate. I see all these guys walking around with Bibles on Wednesday, and I'm going, what the hell are all these people walking around with Bibles on Wednesday? And they go, well, they go to the meetings at night. And I go, what kind of meetings? They go, well, church meeting, but basically Wednesday night in Dallas used to always be Klan night. So
same
some people, you know, some habits are hard to break.
Did you know my first career was as a Baptist evangelist?
No.
And you thought you were a con man.
That's pretty funny.
No, I was a teenage, 13 to 17, I preached.
No kidding.
Wrote a play about it.
Oh, what, were you raised in the sticks or something?
No. My parents were atheists.
You still lived in Houston, though.
Yeah, I lived outside of Houston. My father was, for a long line, of skeptics.
Uh-huh.
and my mother is from an atheist. Her father was an atheist.
Oh, I was raised by two Roman Catholics.
But I was, she brought us up in church. She figured the kids are going to be smart enough to reject all that. I went the other way. I got all of that, and I made a career out of preaching.
No kidding. As a teenager?
As a teenager. But until you, I was 17
did you,
years
did
old.
Did you know you were gay then, or what?
Yeah, and that was part of the struggle. I'm trying to cure myself by going to preach.
Oh, okay. They do that now, I've heard on the radio.
Well, they try. It never works, but I was 12 years old, 13 years old. What did I know worked and didn't work?
Well, that was commendable. Yeah, you were trying to better yourself.
Yeah. But I gave it up when I realized the whole thing's fraud.
Oh, and then you went into your life of crime.
Absolutely. I took up more honest work.
That's a perfect transition.
I took up more honest work and became a burglar.
Huh. Yeah, see? I mean, you know.
Makes sense.
Same with being an accountant.
The retirement system on the burglary work was, that really sucked.
I can imagine.
I went to prison, sentenced to 160 years.
You were just like a cat burglar or something?
I specialized in antique art and jewels.
See, that's what my brother-in-law, Ricky, did for his mom.
Don't snitch on anybody on that show.
Oh, no. I don't think he's alive.
Oh, okay. Well, if he's dead, you can tell it.
Yeah, because that was the front. Our business was Doris Pearl Antiques in Dallas.
Yeah. And he has a lot of money in antiques, especially if you don't have to pay for them up front. We just steal them and sell them.
We were pulling in between $50,000 and $60,000 a month.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot of money.
And I figured out who had sucker buy antiques. Pickers. Go near Nashville.
My wife's scam, which I'm sure got killed in 9/11, was she would get Bonhams and Christie's catalogs from London before they were in New York.
Yeah.
Pick out what looked like the hot items, you know, the Chinese antiques or this or that. We'd go over. She would go to the auctions, hang out for about 3, 4, 5 hours, and then she would go down to the fences that she knew from her mother when her mother was in the business 10, 20 years before. She would buy stolen ones for 10 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
We'd bring them back in our luggage, and then she would put them in her antique shop and sell them to her Highland Park clients for just a few dollars less than they were.
The whole business is like that.
And then she would, well, if you pay me cash, we'll get rid of the sales tax, which was the always bite because she would never sell them other than cash. That way, get them into making.
No, that's how I got busted, was an income tax.
And so there's people would be calling up, you know, wanting to speak to my wife about, you know, I just paid $150,000 for this piece of Amari or whatever, and you know, my job was to say, well, she can't.
We have wandered so far away from the interview that I need to broadcast while they're killing you.
Well, don't you like antiques? I mean, I have not met anybody.
We are not doing this conversation for me to enjoy.
Well, I am. You haven't spoken to anybody who knows what an antique is in 15 years.
Oh, okay. Well,
I've lived with the most horrible people. Yeah. I mean, I love them to death. You know, I've gotten to enjoy them.
They're the only family you got right now.
They're very uneducated, have no taste whatsoever. I mean, other than maybe connoisseurs of heroin.
Okay, you got a new lawyer. What the hell is he going to do?
I don't know. I don't even know who this guy is. His name is Gardner.
What issues are left in your case that you can raise?
Oh, tons of stuff. Tons of stuff. Everything's been hidden in my case. I even got into federal court back in 2010 when I filed my federal writ. I complained like hell that the appointed federal writ attorney, this woman Schmucker who represented she was for years a Texas attorney general. She was the one who tried to kill Nana Williams on that phony gun evidence. And when the Fifth Circuit
Anthony's picked up Nanan's case. Nanan's getting very well represented.
Yeah, but he's been off the row for years.
Yeah, I know.
But the
important thing is that he got off the row, but his case is still important to somebody.
Yeah. So she got fired after the Fifth Circuit found that they were involved in that phony ballistic stuff from Harris County. So immediately after she gets fired from Texas Attorney General office, somebody appoints her my case in Dallas. Well, of course, the judge I wound up getting happens to be best friends, went to law school and was in Dallas DA office with my trial judge, Miss Cocaine. So that obviously makes sense. They sandbagged my whole writ, which they did on my state writ, my direct appeal. Fine. Okay.
Well, is your case really a Dallas family thing?
Who?
A Dallas family thing?
Who? My ex-wife?
Yeah, because I'm dealing with that with a guy out of Houston. It's really, he married this Iranian gal.
Well, I'll give you a little teeny piece of my problem. My first wife, who on
you
Valentine's
Marines
Day,
marry a lot.
I knocked up. I was just over her house having a beer for Valentine's, and I was having sex with her in the shower, standing up, and somehow I got her pregnant.
Yeah.
I wasn't really planning on marrying this woman.
But that becomes a different story of her father.
Yeah,
on the
but she was Catholic, and, you know, I was Catholic, and so I figured, you know.
Let's cover.
I would, you know, and she threatened to have an abortion if I didn't because she was at Aiken Gump, and then I find out she was married to a Jackson Walker attorney at the same time that knocked her up. So I get.
And you go around looking for messes to get into.
Well, it's easy. It's easy if you're if you look like
I do. It's in the Marine psyche. I got you. Got it down.
Get it done. Okay. Right. So. We get married, have a kid. She has a stepson, Bo, who's now a nice young man. I think he's in his 30s now. He's a police officer in Austin. And she starts fooling around at work again, which, you know, she admitted that before she does that, you know. Just something in her psyche that she has to sleep with whoever has a position of power above.
Okay.
I didn't really feel like putting up with it because I'm sitting home taking care of two kids, working my ass off, and I decide to file for divorce and leave. And she goes and gets the first lesbian judge, Linda Thomas, in Dallas, and get a protective order, have me thrown out of my house, and then tried to have my guns taken away and stuff like that. And so this little fight begins. I hired this attorney. He escalates it. Like a fool, I hired another attorney to fight another attorney, right? She's got a whole firm of Aiken Gump behind her. And one thing leads to another. They arrest me. They say that I got to keep my mouth shut about things that I know because a lot of people at Aiken Gump spoke to me about a lot of things because they thought I was an attorney because in between, she was married to this other attorney at Jackson Walker. I find out that me and him look a little bit alike. He was a backup quarterback at LSU before he went to law school. So a lot of people were telling me a lot of stuff that they were doing at Aiken Gump at parties and stuff like that at our home when we're drinking and stuff, thinking I was an attorney. I'm not an attorney. Yeah. So I go during the divorce, say, hey, you know, I'm going to say some of this stuff if you don't give me a good settlement with my visitation with my kid. She's trying to say, oh, you don't get to see your kid, you know, da-da-da. I said, wait a second. The whole reason I agreed
well,
to
see,
marry...
See, all of that comes together. That's
you're missing
it.
The whole
picture.
Point is at one point, I sent her boss, who she was sleeping with, a named partner at the firm, a charge sheet she got in Fort Worth for bankruptcy fraud. Because immediately after we signed the divorce and she changed her name, she went and filed a Fank bankruptcy fraud. I mean, a bankruptcy, trying to get rid of her SMU student loans, which a lawyer cannot discharge.
That's right.
And she used it under my last name. I sent it to him. He fired her. She called me up and said she was going to kill my daughter as revenge. Okay. I went over to the house and broke her nose and laid her out in the street. So that begins my...
That's another aspect of Marines.
Well, but you got to remember, this is one of the first high-profile female attorneys in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, this is the 80s. This is like, 86?
Yeah.
And I've had every female attorney for years trying to kill me, even before this case. So, I mean, that, and of course, you know, I have two female judges. I had a female... habeas attorney who was the prior judge in the court I came out of in Dallas, old Jan Hemphill. I had female from the Texas Attorney General on my state writ, my federal writ, you know. And I'm beginning to wonder if Higginbotham on the Fifth Circuit might be part female, too.
I know Higginbotham. He ruled against me in Hill versus Houston.
Yeah, so he got his little law clerk replaced the
He's
magistrate
getting old.
Judge. Huh?
He's getting old.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is he an old queen?
No,
because he was kind of pissy when I wrote a couple letters to him and he ruled against me.
The opposite of that, he ruled against me in Hilbert's Houston primarily because I was gay. And
well, that doesn't make any sense because in Dallas, I think one of the biggest anti-gay judges was old Anson, and he was best friends with Brad Lawler. And Brad Lawler was the kind of the ringleader of this whole bunch of gay pedophiles.
But I rubbed it in after I won him, beat him. He wrote a minority opinion in two of my cases in the Fifth Circuit.
Uh-huh.
And then when I went to Supreme Court and I was 8-1, it wasn't even close.
I was going to say, it wasn't just him then.
I went back to meet him and thank you for on the case.
Did. No problem.
Getting dead. That's why you got two on.
Oh, okay, okay. I just noticed a red light. I thought, are they killing me already?
All right.
I'm done partially dead.
Have you got any chance of getting a stay?
Huh?
Have you got any chance of getting
a stay? If I have a lawyer, like I was saying before we distracted ourselves, this guy's from Washington. Remember Richard? Did you talk to Richard on the radio?
Yeah.
Did they put him on? I can't remember because I got moved right next to him. I spent his last 9 days with him.
Yeah.
And I mean, we had a blast. He's such a pain in the ass. He is so funny. But so he told me to write his lawyer, you know, just out of the blue because, you know, I've been writing lawyers for years and I just won't give you the time of day. And this guy, it took 3 weeks for him to get my letter.
Okay.
I wrote two attorneys, one in Philadelphia.
You got a very big mail room in those Washington offices.
No, it took 3 weeks to get out of here.
Okay.
But so he gets it and he said he'd look at my case. And I was like, well, okay, well that's something positive. He was nice enough to send me a JPEG.
I want you to do me a favor.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to get a stay.
At you know, least, I'd love that.
Stop. At least for 90 days.
I'd love that.
And then I want you, after 90 days,
we
can
come
do
back?
A redo of this.
No.
Yes, but we're not going to have as
did
much.
Did I blow it? Did I?
No, we're not.
Did I not have the tears?
No,
play the Justin Bieber song.
This is going to make great radio and great television, but it ain't what I talk about on the show while they're putting your ass to death.
Well, I want to be in a better show. I mean,
okay. Well, we do a redo.
Come on. We got to come up with a better show.
End it there.
I mean, you and I, we got to have a better show.
You're right. So that means you've got to get a stay for at least 90 days.
Get rid of Skelton. Get rid of the keep the guy with the deep voice, the black guy.
Yeah.
Let's see, who else could we get in there? Maybe get that, is that girl that comes on afterwards, Rhonda Sheeny, good looking?
Oh, no, she, I know, wait a minute.
She's got a great voice, but I don't know if she's any good looking. Well, I know it's radio, but
I've
been here 14 years.
I'm a gay guy.
I haven't seen a good-looking girl in 14 years.
I'm a gay guy. I have absolutely no taste in women.
But they know them because I've had gay friends, and
those with the right genes can design them.
All right, Ray.
You're my friend, and I.
Well, next time I write you, don't blow me off.
Don't get killed. This is going to be hell of me to do a broadcast, considering how much fun we've had. Okay.
Well, that's all I want everybody to know is I've just had the best time of my life. It doesn't make any difference.
Good luck,
I'm 60 years old now. What the hell?
Good luck. I'm 75, so.
I know. I can tell.
Good luck.
All right. I will see you later. Bye-bye. Thanks for coming.
Jesus.
Well. So, coming through the program, Larry is going to discuss with us the incompetence issue in Mr. Battaglia's trial, and Mike will address the motion for rehearing and the incompetence issue in that. Larry, why don't you talk to us?
Right now, Paige, the thing that really gets me the most, having heard that interview, is, it opened my eyes up to a lot of things. That was one of the more interesting interviews we've had. We now are faced with a man who is likely to be executed, and the mental health issues can kind of get a little bit confusing. He does have some mental problems. Clearly, he's bipolar.
Yes.
Okay, he's been diagnosed as bipolar. The experts have said, look, if this man were receiving his medication, he wouldn't be a problem. Hadn't been a problem in jail at all. If he had been sentenced to life, he would be in prison for until he's 86 years old. Probably wouldn't be a problem at all. So now the mental health issues get a little bit complicated when it comes to how the court system treats him. For instance, at the trial court level, there are two issues. One, whether the person is sane, that whether he knows what he's doing, whether he has the consciousness of mind to know at the time that the offense occurred. And then competency, that is, does he know what's going on in court and can he help his lawyer? Competent to stand trial. There, when it comes down to execution, then there's a separate issue that's called competency, which is totally different. The competency at that level is, does he know he's getting ready to be killed? And does he know that what he did, what he's convicted of doing, whether those two are tied together? That is, if he knows that he's about to be executed by the state, he knows the execution is imminent, and he knows that the execution is a result of the offense that he's convicted of. Now, at the trial court level, what he did was, there seemed to be a strategy of trying to raise a competency for execution type issue with the evidence that was presented, suggesting that if he's not competent to be executed, he's not even competent to receive the death penalty to begin with.
To sort of bootstrap incompetency to be tried onto incompetency to be executed.
Exactly. The competency to be executed at the trial court level, saying, suggesting, which is not part of Texas law, that if a person is not competent to be executed, then he shouldn't be competent to receive death as a sentence. Now, that's not part of Texas law.
No.
It's not part of Texas law at all. But that was the issue that he seemed to be raising throughout. And it was the issue that got him the stay. Okay, once he got the stay, and the trial court was required at that point now to look at the issue of whether this man is competent to be executed. And the evidence there, the hope is that you can put everything else aside. The horrible, the horrendous facts of the case, and then focus on this man. Is he competent to be executed? Does he even know? And we've got four mental health experts, and three of them said he wasn't competent to be executed. And the fourth says that he was competent to be executed, and that he's malingering, meaning that he is putting on a show for the other three, and he snookered them. Now, the judge was the one who made the decision determining that he was competent to be executed. And the judge is given wide discretion in making that determination. And the judge made that determination. And that concerns me, particularly after having heard him. Some of the things that he was saying in the interview, I mean, that closed some of the, addressed some of the issues that I had in my mind when I was reading from the page. Hearing him really opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Mike, would you like to address incompetency in the motions for rehearing?
Yes, I would. It seems like it's not okay to kill you unless you know they're killing you. And that's what it boils down to.
Pretty much.
And, you know, mental illness is a funny question. There's an argument that a lot of people are mentally ill. There's an argument that that's not an excuse for your actions. The courts do have a mental illness standard, but it's a tough one. This new one they're coming up is very unique. He was competent to understand what he did and the consequences of his actions, so legally he's competent. The unique theory they were bringing up, as Larry pointed out, was just because he was competent and knew what he was doing when he did it, does he know he's being executed and why? And I guess the theory for that is, unless he knows he's being punished, then it's cruel to just kill a man. I guess you have to know why you're dying. And he was aware of the date. He was aware of the execution. But the one psychologist who testified for his favor said there was no connection between him doing the crimes of killing his daughters and realizing that's why he's being executed. So you can know you killed your daughters, and you can know you were being executed, but you don't understand why you're being executed for killing your daughters is the reason that you're not competent. That was the one argument that was against him. The interesting part is, and this hearing was only for that purpose, and this, again, as Larry said, is a unique theory in Texas, that a man has got to be aware we're going to execute him and aware that we're doing it. And the question was he aware that he was going to die and why he was going to die? Four witnesses were called. One was a witness for the defense, one was a witness for the state, and two were court appointed. Three of them said there is no connection. You hear his testimony about women, about judges, about the system. He acknowledged, he didn't deny killing his daughters. He just didn't understand. He thought he was being executed because women are against him and drug addict judges are against him. He didn't understand he's being executed for what he did. Now, the question was he coming up with an excuse not to die? Well, again, three of the doctors said he should not be executed because he's not aware of it. What the court, though, said is that two of the doctors are not qualified because they don't have enough experience. One of the doctors has examined over 50 death row inmates. How can you examine 50 death row inmates and not be competent to talk about a death row inmate? But she said he wasn't competent, and they said her testimony was not relevant. The state psychologist, who testified in thousands of criminal cases, the court also says he's not qualified. They sound pretty qualified to me.
Well, and I understand your position.
The problem is when you say Merry Christmas, blank, and shoot your daughters, it's such a horrible thing that nobody is cutting you any break. The fourth doctor said he was not crazy. The other interesting issue, and I thought the most important witness, wasn't the doctors, but they brought in the prison librarian, who testified that she's a librarian in the prison, and she's on death row, and she had a list of all of his reading material. Now, understand, this was a fairly intelligent man. He was a CPA. He made good money. There was evidence of him studying classical literature. He was an educated man. When he's on death row on prison, he's checking out reading material from the prison library. But it seemed like all the material he was checking out were the cases on mental illness and reading on mental illness. And they use that to believe that he was boning up on what to say and how to say it to escape the death penalty. Pretty strong argument, not from a doctor, but from a law librarian. And she copied down everything he read. And it was all the cases that we read and all the cases that his lawyer read.
Yes, indeed it was.
The interesting thing is why he didn't read these cases before trial, because at the trial, none of this came up. There was hints to it. Now, do I think anybody would have found, you know, him insane? I think the crime was so horrible. But I also put to you, can a man do a horrible thing because he's mad at his ex? Could a man do a horrible thing over some state where he is not of his right mind? I would imagine what he did to his daughters would cause a man to go have mental problems. You're now sitting in the cell thinking about what you did? Yeah. Can mental illness end up afterwards? Can you now not accept the fact that you did it, that woman did it, and the judge who does cocaine did it, and yeah, I killed my... But that's not why I'm being killed. I'm being killed because of those females, those judges, those cocaine... that's a mental illness. And the question is he even aware of why he's being killed? He's not being killed and executed because of the judges. He's being executed because he executed his own daughters. And the question becomes, was he saying that because he thought it was a way out? Or did he really, in a place in his mind where he couldn't accept what he did? And the question becomes, if I've got amnesia, and during a time period I don't remember, I do a horrible mass murder, do you have the right to kill me on something I did when I had amnesia? If I'm not aware what I did and why you're killing me?
Well, you know, Texas law is very settled on both points. And he is in the position where Texas law was settled, and it has not been changed since his trial in 2002.
But it sure seemed like somebody thought it needed to be looked into. It just seemed like it's a legal issue. The problem is, just like the Candyman case, these are bad examples to make a test case out of because the facts are so bad, nobody's going to look at it objectively. We've had other cases in which there were real issues of mental understanding. One specifically is a man who threw gasoline on his fiancée and she burst in flames.
Yes.
He might not have been aware that her smoking a cigarette could cause a fire. That's mental, that's what, not a deliberate, he deliberately did it to get back at his wife.
Well, and that was the state's argument from the very beginning, that this was deliberation on his part.
But the question becomes is, if once you're in prison, you can't deal with what you did, and so in your mind, you're being killed because of the system and the judges and females, technically, you're not aware why you're being killed. And that's the issue over here. You don't kill a man if he doesn't understand why he's being killed. The question is, was he making it up or not?
Thank you very much. Well, Mr. John David Battaglia is slated for execution tonight. We have heard nothing about the witnesses crossing the road from our reporter in Huntsville, and we do not know. And we're going to have to close this show without being able to tell you that a stay was granted or that Mr. Battaglia will be executed. Thank you very much for your attention. And we can only hope that those who are deserving of mercy might receive it. Thank you very much.